At LensCrafters, we value expertly tailored eye care, provide state-of-the-art eye exams, offer a wide assortment of designer brands and high-quality lenses, because everything we do at LensCrafters is for every sight that makes your life special. We offer 50% off lenses with frame purchase, shop in-store and online. Book your annual eye exam now on LensCrafters.com. LensCrafters, because sight. Eye exams are available at the independent doctor of optometry at or next to LensCrafters. Doctors in some states are employed by LensCrafters. Offer valid to April 2nd, 2023. See associate for details.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Friday. Well, it's here. It is here, finally, the Matrix rewatch. Thank you guys so much for... I didn't do that, by the way. So I don't know who did, but it's a crime that we're going to have to talk about a little bit. But it is the Matrix rewatch. We did a Spider-Man rewatch with myself, Coy, and Winston. We did all the Star Wars movies, the rewatches for those. You guys really liked them, and people kept asking, what's next? What's next? Well, the Matrix Resurrections is coming up. It's right around the corner, actually. So we said, let's do that. And Coy Jandrew, obviously a massive fan of The Matrix, and I am as well. But we wanted to do something a little different. We wanted to bring someone on who had never seen it before. And on one of the episodes of Big Thing, Kate's like, you know, I've never seen The Matrix. And I was like, well, see it. I know you're going to like it. And let's see what she thought about it. But it's going to be myself, Coy Jandrew, and Kate Mulligan talking about The Matrix. Let's get at it. Come on. Let's do it. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to The Big Thing. It's Matrix time. I'm excited, man. It's always fun to revisit this movie.
Man.
It really is. It's I've seen it so many times, and I never, ever mind watching it. And there he is, Spider-Man extraordinaire.
So Matrix this extraordinaire. One, man.
Yeah.
This one's going to be fun for you. Well, you
a student of The Matrix.
I don't get to talk about this nearly as much as I get to talk about comic books.
I know.
So well, this is my jam.
Kate, wasn't it you and I were on the phone when and we were together and we called Coy on the phone?
Yes,
we did,
yes.
Right?
So that's how this all came about. Expected 2 minutes and I gave you a 20-minute dissertation.
No, it was great.
But it was like, I was like, uh-oh, we just went to church. I don't know if this is religious.
That's exactly
and
what
I was
happened.
Driving. Like, I was literally like, oh, let's talk about The Matrix, yeah. Shall we?
It was a blast to watch this one again, man, because like everything coming out. Like, did you see the new, I thought it was like the official trailer number 2, but it was like I don't know if it was a TV spot or whatever it was, but there's so much more in this little, I feel like you got more about the story of Resurrections in this 1 minute. Did you see the new
one?
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
It's 1 minute piece of what it's going to be like, and it's the Deja Vu trailer.
Mm-hmm.
It told me so much more of like what I think as we get
closer.
Well,
still
and
closer. Not. I mean, still you won't know knowing. Until the credits roll, and then maybe not even
Maybe
then.
Not even then. But all right, so we're getting into this. So, Kate, I want to start with you,
yes.
Because you had never seen this movie. Was I right to believe that you love this movie?
I absolutely loved this movie. Yes. And first of all, I want to say, Coy, thank you for being here, because I know you just screened a call from your mother.
I did. She was actively calling, and I was like, you know what? I love you. It's going to be a minute.
It's going to be a minute. We're talking The Matrix,
we'll get
mom.
Back to you, and she'll understand, because she's my mom. Like, my mom goes like, oh, they're talking about The Matrix? I can wait. I love you, Mom, but you know The Matrix is on.
No, I absolutely love this movie. I think one of the things that I found so interesting is that I have seen, and I was saying this to you a little bit before, I saw The Matrix in the wrong order in terms of the fact that I've seen Avatar. I've seen Inception.
Right.
I've seen movies where your body stays in one place and your mind goes someplace else.
Right.
And I was sort of awed. I'm like, wait, they did this in 99?
Yeah.
And it's so funny.
It holds up better.
Right after
Dark City.
And sometimes you can tell.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that you were saying, too. You're like, well, they weren't the first to do this. But I'm just amazed by that, because I still think Inception's an incredible movie. I still think Avatar is an incredible movie. But it is so interesting. I'm like, well, this is very, very similar. That concept, that overall concept.
And
they
just do it very well. And Coy, so one of the things you really, I think, went over really well with when we talked about it last time was the philosophy of The Matrix.
Yeah.
That's what draws you to it.
That's my obsession is this handles, you know, the Socratic Oath, this handles the cave, this handles so many broad strokes, and it's also like an inkblot test to your beliefs. Like, you can see this as a Buddhist metaphor, a Christian metaphor, a take on postmodernism. You can really interpret your own philosophy through the guise of an action film. What I love about this film is that it doesn't just pivot towards one belief system. It is so open to interpretation while not being fickle. At no point does it not know what it stands for, but it's literally an inkblot test of, you believe blank, here's a story that allows for blank in a way that I think, like, I should preface this, and I'm sorry in advance. I personally, Coy Jandrew, am not a religious man. I grew up agnostic, and the older I get, the more atheist I get. I personally believe that The Matrix does a better job in telling a moral story with religious elements than most religious texts, and it does it in a way that has an approachability. The reason I love comic books is they're a moral compass for me, and they're a way to tell these grand archetypal stories. This, to me, does that in a sci-fi kung fu epic that does a lot more for me maturing as a man that wants to believe in higher powers, that wants to believe in concepts beyond myself, and it does it in a way that really catches you up in 2,000 years of theology in a John Woo movie. Well, so, like, it means the world to me that we're even discussing it, much less they're getting another one.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts, you heathen. Yeah. So,
I just know it's going to come up later that people will be like, wait, that's his take? But I personally struggle with any organized religion, and this, to me, is the closest I've come to understanding why people believe. Because right. I believe in The Matrix.
Well, there was so much in this movie, what the way it's set up. Because, again, what we've talked about in every time we discuss The Matrix is that in 1999, when this movie came out, this was not the talk of the most anticipated movie. Star Wars was. Episode 1 was. And this came out, I believe this one came out, I think it came out in like April.
Came out on Easter because it's about resurrection, and the new one comes out on Christmas.
So
I'm just saying, they're smart.
Well, it came out, and well, they probably also lucked out because they probably couldn't get May or June because A, no one knew what it was going to be.
But
B,
it literally came out on Easter. They came out on a weird Tuesday. They literally scheduled.
They put it out on April
because Jesus,
because they didn't know what they had on their hands. Nobody knew it was going to be this. Like, you know, probably a lot of people, this is too confusing. I guarantee it. You can hear it. Audiences are going to be like, we're not going to know what's going on. And there are still some people that when you watch the first time, they don't really get it all the way through.
I do have some
questions.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is why we want to have you here.
Are you saying that one cannot be told what The Matrix is? You have to see it for yourself? Because that's what I think you're saying. You got to experience your own journey, I think.
Well, I do want to jump to that moment right there. Because last night, you picked new things up all the time, right? But what the Oracle and the actress who played the Oracle passed the thing right after they shot this.
The Rapture Reloaded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before Revolution.
Oh, she wasn't in the second one, was she?
Yep.
Was it, you sure?
90%.
I thought she was recast in the second movie.
I had thought that originally, but I think it's her in the second one, then the third one's a new actress.
She passed away, though.
Yes.
But she's in this particular scene when he goes to find out if he's the one, and it's set up, her timing, it's set up, she tells him, she goes, you're the only one that can really know whether, don't listen to anyone else.
Right.
And then she goes, all right, so you know what I'm about to tell you, that I'm not the one? Sorry, kiddo. She just told you, don't listen to what anybody says. You've got to believe it.
And that's why it's simultaneously the greatest story ever told, which is the Jesus commentary, while also being the greatest story never told, which is the Socratic story. So Socrates, the Socratic method of questioning is endlessly questioning until people doubt their own beliefs, which is what's happening in that scene. But it's also clearly a metaphor for being the one, the chosen one, the Jesus allegory. Right. So it is simultaneously the greatest story ever and never told in one scene. The Oracle Delphi also translates to all sorts of myths. That character herself ties directly into the myths of, say, the original myth was you'd go to this oracle and she would inhale this fume and then talk to another person, and then you'd speak in tongues and you'd translate it. In this, she's smoking a cigarette. She's inhaling fumes. She's inhaling cookies. All of it is tying to the original mythology while giving us a more digestible version of these very heady concepts.
Well, what did you think, Kate? So questions.
I thought Keanu Reeves was hot.
Yeah. He was. He really was.
Sorry, yeah. Sorry. Was that you were probably about to touch on that. Big, but it's philosophy.
That was my next point.
As Joey Pants says, those big, beautiful eyes. But what were your questions?
So, I guess I sort of don't understand the way in which it works. So you can get plugged once you get your brain hole.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what it's called, right? The brain hole.
Yeah,
Once you get the brain hole, you can plug in to simulations, but you also can then plug into the Matrix itself.
Because the Matrix is a simulation, so it's the same programming.
So they just...
HDMI cords.
Yeah,
like
it's universal.
You plug into PlayStation. You can plug into TiVo
or
DVR.
They designed those programs off of the Matrix.
Right.
Gotcha.
So they literally designed their training program, their whatever program, off of the program in the Matrix. So you'd use the same port.
So they and then the phone is like obviously for them to get out of the Matrix.
That's their hard line, and it's got to be a hard line phone because they're using like remember the dial up sound. They're using effectively similar to that to remind your brain. Basically, that's triggering your brain to go, oh, this isn't real. I need to be back there.
That's why I'm jealous of you watching this the first time, because when you, not knowing anything about this movie going into it, right? So that opening scene when Trinity is on the phone, and yes. then she's leaping around, and then obviously runs to the phone booth, and the guy smashes her. So what were you thinking when all that was going down? Because I'm so...
This better make sense soon.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah like, boy, this better all come together.
Did it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think that's like... Dickie, I have a problem with like being like, what's happening here?
Yeah. Right.
And Dickie has always been like, well, let's just wait and see. Like, I definitely had that problem in the movie Enemy. I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Movie 7/8 amazing, and then the 8th didn't land, and I was like, I just spent two hours
to watch a big spider. There's a big spider.
Yeah, I like endings.
I think people. I know that's yeah. anyway. So I have gotten used to be patient. So I watched this by myself, but I was patient. I was like, okay, so this doesn't make sense to me yet, but it's gonna make sense.
Right.
But also, I love the first scene that really grabbed me was Keanu hacking. Mm-hmm. What's his name? John Thompson.
Mr. Anderson.
I guess. That's right. It is Thomas Anderson.
I was like John. I was trying. Yeah. Johnny Mnemonic.
John Wick.
John Wick. Yeah, that's another one I haven't seen. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh that's man.
We're gonna have to rewatch.
Yeah,
those.
That's gonna happen. Yeah. Those are real special.
But okay. So then that scene.
I loved that scene because
the white rabbit following the white rabbit,
and when he's interfacing with, I guess it's Trinity mm-hmm. on the computer, and then. Oh, the white rabbit.
And I love the white rabbit metaphor because obviously the Alice in Wonderland parallels. And yes. through the looking glass is what we're all experiencing. We're looking through the looking glass. So like the idea that we can see our mirror self, residual self image, et cetera, or we can look past the surface into the world that we don't really understand. So the white rabbit representing the trippy aspects of the story, as well as the book he's got his stuff in is Simulacrum and Simulation, which is the idea that we're living in something that's digitized. So even the background stuff is giving you all the details along with those metaphors.
That I was going to bring that.
You're
going to
bring that up, but Coy did it first.
We should have talked about our talking
yeah, we really
points before.
Point beat by beat.
Because Coy just keeps stealing all my stuff.
But all of it, though, I mean, putting him in that hacker world, understanding it, because even if you're watching it like the first time, saying, okay, this is a hacker named Neo, mm-hmm. and not knowing what the hell's about to happen, right?
Right.
So then, and you see, I think that as, and I got to let Kate speak on this, when you're watching it for the first time, and okay, so now he's on this adventure to find out who this is, and then when you get to that scene when the agents are chasing him through and he's like leaning down and he almost goes up to the scaffold, and Trinity's waiting for him, but he doesn't go. And then the interrogation scene when his mouth goes,
yes,
what the hell? At that point, are you like,
yes, still to this moment?
Yeah,
well, I guess part of the thing I don't quite the idea
they
is
they just rebooted him again, they were just rebooted, they basically just rebooted him into his bed. After that whole thing
okay,
happened.
Okay, so yeah. that area, okay, so that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I kept getting confused about, like, how these things would happen, and then he'd wake up, and then these, and I was like, oh, it's because the real world is our dreams, and when we think we're awake is not really, we're in a simulation when we think we're awake. And so I think I was sort of putting it together, but I think one of the thing I have the biggest question on is when we see him in the pod and all of that
right.
going
yeah.
on. Does he believe he's dreaming that, or
he doesn't know what the hell's going on?
Yeah, so yeah. Me too.
Even when Morpheus says to, he's like, "How come my eyes hurt?" He's like, "You've never used them before."
Right, that's his first experience in his body. So that's in the real world. That's in the desert of the real. That's the reality that's caused the planet. We've napalmed the planet. We've burnt out the sky. So that's in reality. Right. That those pods are how they stay alive, is through using our body for warmth and all those things in that scene. So that's the first time he is in reality, but his mind is 27 years of not being able to hang, so that's why he throws up, that's why he can't believe it, that's why that pill is
gonna pop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's why you don't do it that old. They even say, like, we don't bring people out at this age because your brain can't handle it, because you're fully formed in believing a thing.
Right.
So that's the first time we as an audience and Keanu as a character experiences the real.
But that's what I love about this movie, is because everything is so detailed, and it's not, if, like, when you go back, if you ever watch this movie again, like, every time you watch it, it makes more sense every time you watch it. 2 and 3, we're not talking about that right now, not as much. I think they try to get too complicated with 2 and 3.
Yeah.
But this one, it's like there's these little things that are just so, that are set up perfectly. Like you said, like the reason why the search of, everybody has a purpose.
Yeah.
Purpose, Mr. Anderson.
And every detail is so, like, even the name Neo means new, but also one. Even the name is so tied to so many details, and it's just, it's so tightly written and so perfect. And some of the lines of dialogue are straight out of theology books. Some lines are straight out of philosophy books, and they weave it into the story that makes you want to think that there's something more. Like, I personally, the older I get, the less I doubt this reality, and that could be drugs, but also, like, I definitely experience moments of, as I get older, the less religion makes sense because it we've explained, like, we invented gods to explain away things. Like, Zeus was thunder and lightning, and we've explained that away.
Yes.
Whereas we've invented now, in our reality, a world where we're using our phones more than we're in person. We're getting dopamine from notifications that are digital. I wrote all my notes in a phone instead of writing it on paper. And more, I'm spending more time in someone's phone, like you're watching this right now, or on a screen. I'm digitally more alive than I am analog. And we're living in a reality that makes more sense to be a simulation because we're seeing more and more cryptocurrency, NFTs, everything we're doing is going to the abstract of the fake instead of the reality of the real. So I'm starting to think, if we can prove this could be a possibility, that makes it more real than disproving other things.
What are you talking about?
Like AR, VR. Do you know what I mean? Like everything feels like we're heading towards, if this isn't already true, it will be to me.
Yeah.
Because our neural impulses, like everything we do, like this is just signals electricity going to our brain saying we feel this.
Yeah.
We can't prove this is real at all.
Right.
Well, I mean, so, and that's ultimately what the... What,
I should have taken drugs.
But that's what. But all the. I mean, all the philosophy of it, everything that they put together, like you said, the religion, the political side of it, like everything, it's still a statement of what's going on today. The technology, how you're so reliant on it, but there is that great scene when he's starting to get trained, and he's like, "I know jujitsu."
Yeah.
And then he goes, "You want some more?" He's like, "Hell yes!"
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
That like just because imagine you could just. Download,
and now,
and that's it.
Yeah,
and this was before the internet was mainstream. That's exactly what we're doing. We've just used it for evil. Like we can actually get all information ever gleaned by human minds on the internet. We can't plug it in, but we can gain all that information. And instead, we'd like to send dick pics and troll people. Like we have that access.
Okay, you and I use the internet differently.
I've actually never taken a dick pic because of the Matrix. Because there's such accessibility and there's such, like, I don't
just
trust
because
this.
Of the Matrix?
Just because of the Matrix.
I mean, because of Keanu. No, but in 99, I feel like it was before we had
you
the
really
internet.
You really do
like,
get your morality from the
really
Matrix.
Do. I was 11 years old when this came out. And I was like, yo, if we can access. Like, I know. I'm sorry. I wanted to save that for later.
Barely 30.
No.
I was 11. But that taught
really
me.
That really makes me hot.
It makes you hot.
That
okay,
makes
there
me,
go.
No, not oh. like hot, but like.
Angry.
Like see red.
But think about how much connectivity they showed us in 99. And then the internet really went mainstream in 2003.
Yeah.
So I was like, I've learned some lessons. No dick pics.
Well, but so I mean, let's get back into the story of it because when he goes and he's trying to figure it out, this movie is a classic because anytime you can pull something out of it, no matter what it is, it's instantly recognizable for the film. And one of them, obviously the main thing is take the red pill or the blue pill. How many times you hear red pill? Oh my, why didn't I take the blue pill?
Yeah.
And that whole scene of even when he decides it and they're trying to figure it out and it's like overtaking his body and he find and then as Kate mentioned before, he wakes up. When you're watching that for the first time in the theater, whether it's or just the other night, if you're Kate, right? It's like you're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
This is you're following it, but you're still like, wow, this is crazy. Okay, you know, his body's like this, and they start to it explains and each piece just keeps figuring itself out. And Hugo Weaving, who is just
Elrond.
Absolute,
Hubbard
doing the work.
But he's a Terminator, you know, like that's and by the way, Terminator, another movie that much so takes a lot of
that dystopian
the machines taking over.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know that was James Cameron did that in 84, you know. So this was a mixture of like all those great things. But anyway, that particular thing of him having to learn it, figure out, believing in himself, because that's ultimately the what this is about.
And that's where the cave comes in. Like the allegory of the cave is the concept that we've all been clouded in a visual that we've only got so much access, right? We've only seen this world. And the cave is about this world where we're all chained to something, and basically they use firelight and shadow puppets to make us think we've seen the world. And then someone escapes the cave and sees the real world. And that's the exposure to the reality that's so traumatizing. It's too bright. It's too much. So the red pill is you accepting the reality that you actually can't handle. And what I love is the etymology of the word educate literally means to lead out. So the idea of to lead out of the cave is to educate someone on reality. Yeah. So this movie does in one scene show an entire concept that we've studied for years through this incredible action set piece of the red pill. Also, the red pill is based on this movie is the Wachowski brothers at the time. They are now the Wachowski sisters. The pills are based off of estrogen pills where people take to become who they feel like they actually are. So by it being a pill, that's actually a metaphor for the trans allegory that slowly forms throughout throughout the films. And this was a movie made in 99 when this we were even less accepting. Right now, a lot of people are monsters. Even more people were monsters 22 years ago. But this allows them to be like, hey, this is the body I actually belong in. This is who I actually am. This is who I actually feel like I belong to.
It's very interesting you said that, because I said, oh, after watching this, I'm like, this is definitely a movie made by people who feel trapped.
Yeah.
There's no, I mean, I feel like that's so fascinating to see somebody's sort of personal, I mean, of course, like, I'm watching it with hindsight. You didn't know in 99 when you watched it, like, these men are going to transition to be women someday. But it definitely felt to me, that's interesting about the estrogen pills, because I didn't know that it was that closely linked. But I
And look at the culture they're in. They're in this underground scene. There's a lot of people. And even the casting, Keanu and Carrie Ann are almost a non-binary representation of
each
other.
Yeah, they're, like, very...
They're very, like, the male and female, but both are very...
androgynous.
And Keanu is a very pretty man, and Carrie Ann is a very handsome woman. So there's an element of the transition, even in the duality of the characters that love each other. And, and her love is what the Oracle tells her, and his accepting that he's the one is also tying back to Socrates, because Socrates died because he believed certain things and they killed him for it. So him having to die to be reborn as the one ties into the Jesus metaphor and the Socrates metaphor and the Trinity love, which ties into the Oracle three times over.
I'm going to ask a question that maybe gets answered in the later movies.
Sure.
Because I've only seen...
We're not doing those. Matrix, Yeah, and Animatrix you saw.
Animatrix. Does the blue? Do we ever find out what the blue pill actually does?
You wake up back in your bed and you think
that's what they say. Yeah. Do we ever see anybody take it?
I think Matrix Resurrection says it.
You think? You think the new one?
There's a part of me, and this is my tinfoil hat theory, that thinks that the real Matrix, the Zion experience, is a bit of programming designed to bring Keanu, the malware that is Neo, to the surface, and that we've not seen the actual real world yet, and that we might have certain characters we think that are real be programs within the Matrix. I think we've still potentially had another layer coming in this next one.
I mean, that's all that stuff is laid out to where it's possible, but it's just it's possible, and it needs to also make sense, and not in a way that it's like, wait, what? Because that
you can't dream within a dream.
Yeah, because in the third movie, a lot of this stuff that happens, you're like, wait, what?
The drop off between one and two is bad, but not horrendous. Drop off between two and three is pretty rough. It's a bad time.
Well, that's why I'm hoping that four, you know. And it looks like from the trailer that it goes back to what this movie is.
Yeah,
and
that's what really, I'm hearing.
And you spend a lot more time inside of the Matrix and the ideas and the philosophies and all of that. Because I do want to say, though, about Joey Pantoliano, who I love, love him. The only problem with his casting is that it's not really a surprise when he turns on him.
Sure.
No.
Because it's Joey Pants. He's usually always either a bad guy or criminal or something, too. So when
a Fratelli. He's a Fratelli.
He's in The Sopranos. He's a Fratelli. I mean, so a lot of times when he's doing, and minus him being what the lieutenant in Bad Boys. But but he's, you know, so when it happens, you're like, okay, well, like, we knew that was coming. But I thought they did a nice setup to where Tank winds up.
Right.
And I mean,
Judas always seemed pretty obvious.
Yes.
So I feel like him being the Judas, you're like, well, guys, maybe don't trust that guy.
You know it right away. And even the way that he's doing, I do love that conversation that he has with Adrian Smith. It's like, I want to be someone important, like an actor.
Yeah. Because that adds a meta-ness to a meta movie,
yes.
which is genius.
I love that idea. I love the thought of it. I love that scene where he's got the stake and he's just like, I know this isn't real. I know that it's not, because what that scene does, it also allows you, it starts to tell you more information about the movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it says, and it's just those little tidbits where it's just like, the Matrix is telling me that these are, it's sending symbols to my head to tell me that it tastes juicy and delicious.
And that does two things for me is it's mind over matter, which we later see through powers. So that movie is, he knows consciously it's not real, but his mind is able to overpower the information. So he tastes it again. So the mind over matter later is beautifully rendered with there is no spoon. Like, the matter of the spoon is irrelevant because you are the one that bends. So mind over matter is kind of the theme of the film and the concepts. But it also, to me, shows, there's this concept in reincarnation that when we're dead, our soul experiences the true forms of life. So a form in the cave metaphor and stuff is the truest essence of something. And when our soul is free from our bodies, it's able to experience true beauty, true horror, true love. And what we experience through deja vu, which also is used in this film, is our bodies remembering those things. So I also felt like they were touching on the idea that every time we are plugged in or plugged out of the Matrix, or we become a new body, because you see the gooey residue of other people feeding the babies, that's a form of reincarnation. reincarnation. So the idea that our bodies inherently remember positive forms and we're drawn to something. And I feel like that stake moment was, in a very literal stake method, a way of showing like humans are we know something's off. We know something's Jeff's out of center. And I don't know about you guys, but I've always lived with that like splinter in my mind thing where I feel like something's off at all times. So oh. I like literally don't trust any reality.
Okay.
And I always wonder if that is either mental health or if it's something that's pulling me towards, we're led by questions.
Yeah.
So is it keeping me asking questions to keep me from being idle, or is it something as broad as a past concept?
Yeah. I think mental health probably.
Probably mental probably health. I mean, I live in LA and I definitely do talk to Amber for a living. And
that would be it. I was calling the cops during that whole thing.
All right, guys, I'm going to get a head start.
No, it's a great point you made, though, too, because that's ultimately what this movie wants you to do. It wants you to think about those things. It doesn't want you to, look, the action scenes are phenomenal. The technology at the time.
Bullet time, man.
This is the thing. When you say that Phantom Menace came out the same year, didn't the speeders look better? Flying.
I don't think the speeders look pretty good in the pod racing?
No, not the pod racing.
Which one?
You just see like a bunch of, I don't know if you're talking Thomas Harper's going to be mad, but like just like a bunch of ships flying like in the sky.
I don't know.
I'm like, oh no. Like it's like there's land below. I'm like, this is a green
Well,
sky.
The tech that they had, it was definitely... everybody started doing.
Oh yeah,
time
scary
afterwards.
Movie made a fucking
everybody
meal out of it.
Everybody started doing it afterwards, and it was tired after a bit. But they really changed the game with the effects and the way that they used it. And again, remember, this was not a movie that Warner Brothers thought was going to be what it was.
Yeah,
Joel Silver, no chance he knew.
You worked for Joel Silver.
I did. It was way before this. I mean, but it was. Oh, excuse me, way after this. Yeah. But this was.
Like, I was 11.
No. But way after this. But this was. But you know he. That's the thing. Joel caught gold a bunch of times. Predator, Die Hard.
Lethal Weapon.
Weird Science, Lethal Weapon. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And this one was the one that basically had him set up at Warner Brothers for years. And
obviously Project X.
Project X. Not the worst movie in the world.
I know. I was on that movie. I did 5 weeks on that movie.
Did you work with Ethan?
Yeah, it's Joel and...
Did you work with Ethan Irwin at the time? Because he was on it. Yeah, Ethan was the producer on that movie.
No!
Ethan,
we got to have that talk.
Do you know Ethan is the president of Silver Pictures now?
What?
Did you not know that?
None of this.
Yeah, Ethan's the president. Joel doesn't even run the company anymore.
Ethan runs Joel's company?
Yeah,
and Ethan, would he have been on set?
At that time, yeah.
That definitely. Is insane.
Yeah, Ethan is... Ethan
Wait,
went from
what'd you do on it?
I was an actor and a stunt guy, and I was so in the original script, there was a villain, which they pretty much wrote out. I was the villain's best friend. So as they were changing the script on the day, which they did because it was a party movie, they just were like, hey, Coy, you want to skateboard down that roof? Okay.
I
want to ride
surprised.
A motorcycle with that fire? I'll ride that.
I wouldn't be surprised if Ethan wrote some of it because
that's amazing.
Ethan would write. Ethan was there in 2000. When I got there in 2005, that's when I met Ethan. Ethan was there in 2005. Naveed was there. Eric Olson, Gambino.
That's amazing.
Susan Downey. And Ethan's still there and stayed all the way through. And now Ethan, after Joel left, Ethan outlived Joel.
I got to ask him about it. Because if we met on that set, it'll be like the Winston moment all over again. Jesus, yeah, this show is teaching me all about my own life.
Your whole life.
I'm trapped in the matrix of my own reality.
Well, look, this movie, it takes place in 2199 is what Morpheus says. He says,
yep.
You believe it is.
He says you think it's 1999.
He said it's closer to 21.
We lost track.
The question is, are people shaving their balls in 2199? Obviously. I don't know if they're doing that or not. They're probably doing it in the Matrix, probably not on the ship. But if you were smart, you'd be shaving your ball bags. And you got to do it because, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? Ho, 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 ho. It's Christmas time. It's coming up right around the corner. And if... you were smart, you get yourself the Manscaped. Why? Because it's the best damn product out there. I love it. I can't tell you how much I love it. And the holidays are coming here early at Manscaped, which is the leading men's hygiene brand. Manscaped just launched new products, including their all-new ultra-premium body wash and a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. It's time to give yourself or someone who needs it the gift of beautiful skin, hair, and bowls this holiday season. Go to manscaped.com. Use that code BIGTHING for 20% off and free shipping. Jingle balls to the walls, fellas. Listen up. Untrimmed pubes are a thing of the past, and it's possible that you might have Santa's beard in your pants. And nobody except Kate Mulligan wants that.
Yeah.
It's time to leave your significant other some cookies and milk at the bottom of your chimney, and I'm talking about the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. I don't ever use that machete on the tomatoes anymore. You just can't do it. You can't do it. You gotta take care of yourself, and you don't want to get cuts. Ugh. It's the worst. Nobody wants that. It's like you say, oh, this is gonna. I'll be fine. You're not fine. Next thing you know, you're taping your sack up and you look like an asshole. So don't do that. So inside the Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the Signature Lawnmower 4.0. This electric trimmer has advanced skin-safe technology to reduce those cuts on your nuts. This hygiene bundle is also going to come with a pair of Manscaped anti-chafing boxers that'll keep your keep the junk fresh all day, like a supermarket. The perfect package for your perfect package. Manscaped's going beyond the groin with their new ultra-premium body wash. It smells amazing. It's infused with aloe vera and sea salt to keep your skin feeling clean, nice, and moisturized. Tis the season to load up on Manscaped products, so get yourself, your dad, your brother, your friends, the best gift of all, the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. And you want to get 20% off and free shipping with the code BIGTHING at manscaped.com? Well, then why aren't you doing it? Because you got something wrong with your face? Because you should be looking up at the world saying, I have an opportunity to get manscaped.com. Every guy out there needs to add Manscaped to their wish list this season. Go get 20% off and free shipping with that code BIGTHING at manscaped.com. Did you hear what I just said to you? That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And use that code BIGTHING. Clean up your nuts and make Santa proud this year. Stop being a fucking asshole.
I hope Keanu watches this. I hope he's like, you know what? I'm enjoying their conversation, and then nuts. And he gets one. I hope he gets one too.
I'll send him.
Yeah, I think because I mean Keanu, we gotta make sure he's good. I mean, he's got the beard for John Wick. We gotta make sure he's taken care of.
He's Neo. He's got him.
Yeah, he's got him.
You wouldn't be surprised if that motherfucker invented it.
He's got the one.
He's like,
how glad am I that I
know what that is
now that makes sense.
Now this makes sense. Yep. I've played with her every single time I've come into this
and how
studio,
amazing
basically.
Is Carrie Ann in that movie?
She's so good.
Like, what a force of nature.
Ugly. She's not ugly.
And just, like, woo! So goddamn capable. Yeah. I just love that she can just hang.
Well, she is just is a great character overall because of, like, she's, like, doubtful in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit. Because she knows what the Oracle's told her. But she's doubtful. But she's still willing to give it a shot and say, all right, this I believe in Morpheus.
Yeah.
And Morpheus is saying, like, I mean, he's relentless. Right. Saying that this is the guy. So this is the guy that I'm apparently going to fall in love with, this guy. So let me see if he's got the goods. And then the more and more she spends time with him, the more and more she's like, okay, I'm kind of starting to fall for this guy. And he does have it in him. And even when that whole thing went, when you're pulling the plugs on everybody, when Joey Pants is doing it, and it was Cypher, right?
Yep.
And another quotable line. Not like this.
Dude, not she's like only this. Got a couple lines, but so much impact.
That's so memorable. Then done. But when he's like, look in those eyes and tell me, you think he's the one? She's like, yes. And then he goes, no. And then boom.
Yeah. So it's efficiency really of time is so incredible because you only get so much time with her. You only get so much time with Wheaties guy, the snot.
Oh, Mouse.
Yeah,
Mouse.
You only get so much time, but you care about when you lose.
You do, right.
And you're so invested in everyone. And the balance between action and long, heady philosophy and back to plot. Like, the movie juggles so much in just over 2 hours. More movies need to look at this. We haven't had anything really like it. Inception's maybe the closest. But I would argue even Inception doesn't really balance it as well. Like, there Inception's... I love Inception. I don't rewatch Inception as much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I watch Matrix 4 or 5 times every couple years. I've only seen Inception like 4 or 5 times total.
Yes. That's a harder one for me to. I know where you're going with it, but Inception is one of my favorites of all time. But
I'm talking about the balance for me.
But there's something about Matrix that, like, even for this, I there's certain movies that we watch in Spider-Man or Star Wars, and I was like, here we
strap
go.
Strap in.
Here we go.
I'm a little like that with Revolutions, not going to lie. I'm a little worried about Matrix 3.
And I know we're going to talk about Animatrix. There's a lot of Animatrix that I really like, but there were some of them that I feel like, okay, let's go. Mm. I never feel like that with Matrix.
Not a moment.
I watched it with my wife a year ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll watch it again. And I know she wants to watch it again because she wants to see the new one.
Right.
So I'll watch it again with her. Yeah. Like, it's like.
She likes it too?
She likes the first one a lot. Yeah. It's flawless. You know, it's just such an incredible movie overall that it does lend itself to be able, because of what they have going for them leaning into this new movie is because of the computer and because of rebooting things and rebooting a system, you can get away with, besides of just like, it was a dream.
Yeah.
Or like the Dallas thing, or this didn't really happen, or it was a retcon. You can do it because of the way that computer programs work.
Matrix was version 6. They talk about how this was the 6th iteration of the Matrix. So we have the opportunity for version 7. This could be version 20. We really we don't know because they allow for that kind of storytelling.
Well, Smith has that whole conversation with Morpheus when he's trying to get the stuff out of his brain. He goes, you know, the first version of the Matrix was basically essentially Eden.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he was telling, and he's saying that, but humans rejected it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't buy it. And
the human beings as a virus thing has stuck with me since 99. The reality is really we don't know what it is. And the more like I look at the Mandela effect, the more I look at like certain realities that don't make sense to me, the more I look at, you know, our spatial awareness, things that we can't quite comprehend. Like the Mandela effect freaks me out because the Berenstain Bears thing, the Shaq in that wizard movie, like things that we misremember. Like Berenstain Bears, like it's Bernstein Bears. Like we all think it's spelled differently than it is.
Yeah.
Like the concept of Berenstain Bears and the Mandela effect, the fact that we all thought Mandela was dead and then like 20 years later he actually died. Like that's the concept.
Oh, okay.
Those glitches in the Matrix I've been wrestling with since 99.
I read Berenstain Bears to my kid all the time.
I know. I was like, what?
Is she going to start doing witch spells?
Oh, no. Papa Bear got canceled.
He's out. Oh. He's done.
I'll tell you, those fucking bears, though, you can't come up with a better name than Brother Or sister
Brother,
bear?
Sister
that's
it. Bear?
That's all you get.
And then the baby's Honey Bear. I'm like, she gonna be a stripper?
Honey Bear, though, honey at bear. Least has a little bit of you know,
personality.
It, yes.
Or, but who else is brother and sister bear? So give me a break.
That's all they get.
Yeah.
But to this day, like when I wake up and I'm not sure if I'm awake or not, like I think of this. And I don't know if any singular movie has had the impact on me in the history of my movie watching experience as The Matrix.
Yeah. It's like, it's the only other movie to me, and it's for different reasons, but Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless.
Oh, I love that movie.
Has a pretty solid effect on me also. But yes, it does because of what he says and Morpheus, he says to him, did you ever have a dream that you felt was just so real? Mm-hmm. And how many times have you been the other day? Oh, shit. 2 nights ago, I had a dream and I felt like I was sleeping for like 7 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I was sleeping for like 40 minutes.
Ugh.
Right? And I felt like, and I remembered all the, it's so weird though in the dream though too, where you can, if you start to remember your dream right when you wake up, mm-hmm. how much detail you can remember.
Yes.
But as time goes on, so it just quickly. Goes away.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Bad programming.
Where did it go? It was in my head. Now I can't remember.
You know what's crazy is that when I went on Zoloft.
Is that a TV show?
When I went on
Zoloft.
Wait, Ethan Irwin works it on Zoloft.
He's the president of Zoloft.
He wrote it. He's the president of Zoloft.
Oh my god! But no, when I went on Zoloft initially, I started like remembering all of my. I mean, like just truly having vivid, awesome dreams. Just like and remembering them all because apparently the reason why we do or do not remember dreams is depending on when we wake up. If we wake up in an REM
cycle
or whatever. But so I remember talking to my therapist and she was like, or my psychiatrist, and she was like, so are you having these symptoms? And I'm like, no. She's like, vivid dreams. I'm like, yes. I said, that's a thing? She's like, yeah, that's a thing. And then also, I don't know if you've experimented with any of the weed gummies I've given you. Great dreams on gummies, too.
Yeah.
There is something about, like, altering your mind.
Oh, absolutely. And that, we alter our chemicals constantly.
I mean, the LSD movement, Timothy Leary, and all that, and has opened up the doors of perception. I mean,
I've literally seen realities where I've mapped the world with my face, and then reality mapped over my entire body, and then I felt like I control space-time. Like, I've experienced a space-time
awareness.
So you have
a therapist,
awareness.
Right? We do think
that was with the Timothy Leary method.
Didn't even
that
realize
was,
he's sleeping.
That was no, but like through microdosing or heroic dosing and through LSD and like through those things, we've been able to see other realities. And it's kind of like the smelly fart theory. Like we're sitting in a world exactly. So like, say he farted right now, and we didn't have the ability to smell it because like one of us didn't have the olfactory sense.
Both of us had COVID.
Right now we're all gonna die.
Well,
we wouldn't know that happened. We wouldn't be able to sense it if we were lacking the lack of perception.
Right.
Of it. That's the same as the perception.
It's like
the world we live in. We can't see some colors.
It's when you're, first of all, dogs have different perceptions. Because you can fart in a dog's face. And
it's vibing, man.
I've tried. No. But little kids. Don't develop that right away.
Yeah.
Because like, it's like garbage smell. Little kid will just crawl right by.
Right.
Right? And then eventually the brain says, no. That stinks.
Right.
And then, I don't know. It probably happened quick with my 4-year-old. She was screaming out, "Oh, stinks in here!"
Yeah.
Right? Like, but that, but she wasn't doing that when she right away.
Yeah.
Like even when she couldn't talk, wasn't one of these things of just like making a face or anything. The smell is, it's just there. For
also,
and dogs
like,
don't know. They just think the air smells bad once in a while.
Phantom limb theory. Like when someone loses an arm and still feels it, there is something to that that is more than what we're experiencing. The fact that we can acknowledge neurons that are no longer firing, the fact that we can have sensations in something that isn't there, I just don't necessarily believe in this.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
Well, I'll smack you over the head with something else. But either way, so this is, you go back to him, I think that what really moves this movie is once Morpheus, like the Oracle tells him, you're gonna have a shot here, kid. This is it. You're gonna have it. You're gonna choose. He believes it so much, and she knows exactly what she's doing. She knows that he's the one. She knows, and she's basically like, here's what you got to do. He's gonna sacrifice himself because he believes that you're the one. So you've got to go in there, and you've got to make a choice: your life or his. And Neo even says it. Neo at this point doesn't necessarily believe that he is the one, but he believes that he knows that he can save Morpheus.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only problem I think, even though I said it's perfect, I think I do have one question about when Neo and Trinity are on the helicopter and they're firing that big gun, why don't they hit Morpheus?
I have the same exact question. How does he's in the background in the chair and he's like, you know,
I know he's able to manipulate the bullets and stuff.
I always
too,
saw it as the opposite of dodging bullets.
Just manipulating
for me,
it.
Yeah, for me,
sure
I just saw it as like he's controlling where they go as well as like him stopping them.
I can get behind that because of the way that, you know, his
program
and the way that he can certain do stuff. It's just a lot going on with the amount of bullets, but whatever.
I mean, he's able to manipulate all other realities with the flying and the stopping.
He hadn't gotten to that point yet, though, at where he is on the helicopter. Remember, because he doesn't really, because even when he's on the roof, he goes, Trinity! And then that's the first time he does something like that.
Right.
So he really hasn't manipulated.
That's fair.
So that's event. Like if it was like in the middle of 2 or 3 and he did that, I'd be like, oh yeah, well, he knows how to manipulate.
He's Superman,
it. He hasn't figured it out yet. So, but I can give it a pass because we talk about that roof scene and everything that's going on. It's like, he's starting to believe. Like all of that. Like that comes later on. But,
chills,
but,
man. Like seeing that slow-mo, the chuk-chuk-chuk, and there's just so much going on, and the visuals are so perfect. I love the green tint the whole movie has when you're in the
music.
Matrix.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I'm 90s techno is like nothing else for
really
energy,
good.
Man. Like Prodigy and Crystal Method, that is my jam.
I love that they use EDM. I love that the Wachowskis use. I listen to EDM all the time to help me write, whether it's ADD or whatever, too. It's funny. Like, Ellis walked in one day, and I had it blasting on my ears, and he's like, you can write to that? I go, it shuts everything out.
Yeah.
And
have you tried Bionic Tones?
No.
You can have a Bionic Tone of one frequency in this ear and one of them this ear, and it helps your brain actually calibrate differently.
Oh,
like, cool. I've cried putting on headphones where it was like, tears, like it caused immediate emotion.
All right, so I'm gonna have to do
try Bionic Tones.
You always said to me, you really want to put on a pair of headphones and cry.
It's so helpful.
This is perfect.
This is how you do it.
You guys normally just walk around my backyard and cry.
That's more about the 4-year-old.
That's more about the 4-year-old. It's more about in general. Why am I picking up shit again? All right, so but it's that moment. Go ahead, Kate.
I was gonna say, I do have one more question. How come Neo makes it?
How come he lives?
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Because he has to die in order to believe he's the one. It's the reincarnation.
Because that's the thing, is that what they tell you, what they tell most people who are plugged in, if you die in the Matrix, because your brain makes it real.
But he believes
brain
so
did not
fully.
Make it real.
Oh, did it make it real?
And that's what activates the
so
oneness.
So that's why when they die on the ship, they're actually dead.
So if Neo would have died on the ship, he's dead. But he dies inside the Matrix, but he knows it's not real. He knows how to manipulate.
The threat of them chasing you in the Matrix then?
Well, because not everybody can do that. Only Neo.
Only Neo.
Do
he's the only one to even fight the agents
because
before.
He's
like
the
one.
That's
not
the
two.
The point is that
the
he's one. That. That's
so
what
I missed that. I apologize.
Morpheus tells him when he's telling him about there was a guy that was able to manipulate the Matrix and able to do all this stuff, and then you see it when he's seeing in code.
And that sound design too, man.
It's
when you hear the
But how about the old Western feel of when he's in the subway scene with Agent Smith, and like even the piece of paper goes by like an old dust ball.
Yeah, and then they duel, but kung
and
fu.
And even when Neo's
the confidence, the embracing it.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite bits of sound design in the history of cinema is when he catches his hand, he goes, and he like does the little.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. It's pretty great.
Oh,
it's
I love
great.
The movie so much.
It's great. So did you go ahead, Kate? You had something.
There was another.
What scenes really stood out at what point? Because you, like you said in the beginning.
New.
I'm new.
You're using your eyes for the first time.
Yeah. When you started watching it, and like you said, you had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
When did you start going, oh, I get it, and then it's like, oh my God, this movie's great?
I think once he got a head hole, it started to make, like, once they gave him a brain hole. I feel like I was sort of like, okay, I'm feeling this out, and like, the hacker stuff was like really clear, and then like him getting, but once he actually like joined them on the ship, that's when I was like, oh, and like there is some exposition to help explain it a bit.
Yeah, of course.
But I have to say, like, I loved all of the training montages, like him, not even training, because he was programmed.
Yeah, it's training, systems to start your training.
He and Lawrence Fishburne, when they filmed this, that looks like it's at least Keanu.
Oh yeah, he learned so much, and Larry Fishburne.
Did
like,
they
knows,
speed
yeah.
up the filming?
You mean for the martial arts when they're doing it?
Oh yeah,
okay.
That scene, that scene's so great. Even when they're, he's like, Morpheus fighting Neo, and they'll run out and drop everything,
and they
watch it
in code. I love that they're watching it like that.
And they could see it, and it's well, but they're watching in a code at one point, but then they're actually, you can actually see them almost like VR, you know,
right.
Like with like it's like projection, because if you think about it, in $21.99, you'd be able to project the actual images of what the program is on a screen, and to watch them doing that and seeing. And then going into the jump, no one makes their first jump.
Yep.
And did you think he was going to make it?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Of course I did. Okay. I
also loved, like, that's a leap of faith metaphor times two, because the initial leap of faith would have been, you know, he's coming out of the building and he didn't trust fully. And then he trusts when he does the leap of faith and still falls. So I honestly think the leap of faith is meant to fail. Like, you need to experience your trust being validated. He fully trusted him enough to have that Looney Tunes moment.
You have Morpheus, who tells him, he says to him, he goes, there's a lot of people that they don't understand it. They're plugged into the Matrix, and they're, unfortunately, they're enemies. They can't understand it. So you're like, okay, it tells the audience, wait a minute, we gotta
look deeper.
Yeah, we gotta look deeper. We also know that they don't know that they're connected to the internet.
Yeah,
they don't see it. They don't see it. So when they go, they gotta go.
Right, and the moment for me, actually, we're talking about the fight. Like, is you think that's air you're breathing now? There's so many moments that make you, like, you as the audience go, like, okay, all right, let's talk about it. Let's see where we go from here. Yeah. And it's, the writing is so tight, and it doesn't waste a breath.
Yeah, Kate.
Yes.
Thank you.
Also, if you guys have you ever done a flotation tank? Have you ever done
the sensory deprivation?
Yeah, you ever done those?
I wanted to.
Oh,
so
highly
badly.
Recommend. There's one in Woodland Hills that I love.
Oh, there is. Okay.
And there's Groupons all the time, so it's affordable.
Oh, she loves a Groupon.
I'm a Groupon guy. But like it puts you in a tank that it actually reminds me of the Matrix. Obviously, this informed my life. But you are at a temperature that is your exact body temperature, and you're completely weightless, and you're floating in this abstraction, and your brain is able to find new tributaries and places it's never been. Because think about how often you're just aware of your body, and you're aware of all these things and all these visuals. Within like 10 minutes, it's like skipping ahead to year 20 of being a Buddhist monk. Like, you just meditate deeper and see further and experience more. And I often think about what that would be like as paralleling the first moment, seeing the real world in the Matrix, seeing for your first time. And it feels like being one of those pods. Like, I highly recommend.
It's funny. Do you watch the show Dave? Either of you?
Oh, I love Dave.
So there's season two.
Yeah.
I'm not giving anything away, but
he's a Matrix allegory. There's a whole Matrix sequence.
Well, I was going to say he goes into a deprivation tank.
Yeah.
And
but
they,
he comes out with the eyebrows and things.
Yes,
that's it's a Matrix reference.
Yes, oh, that's right. Oh my gosh. But basically they leave him in there. They forget to take him out.
Right.
And he basically has had this horrible, horrible writer's block. And he comes out of the tank. He's at Rick Rubin's house.
Yeah.
Right?
And there's an almost Rick Rubin like wandering the thing. And then you see a real Rick Rubin.
Yes,
highly recommend a flotation tank.
Like, yeah.
Anyway,
well, you know, you guys mentioned Mouse before.
Yeah.
I love that scene when he's sitting there and he's talking, when they're eating the goop. And he's talking about, how do you know a chicken? Because everything tastes like
chicken.
That was another great line.
Yeah.
So much to it. But you know what I wish? You know what they wish they had? They wish that they had Magic Spoon. They really do. They wish they had Magic Spoon.
That was the transition. There it was. I'm like, he's talking. Yeah, that was it.
But they didn't have Magic Spoon. They wish that they would have. I've been eating so much Magic Spoon, by the way. And growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid. But mostly, so a lot of times you got to give it up because it's full of sugar and it's junk that you really shouldn't eat. Have you tried this yet, Kate?
Yes. The first time.
Oh, you did. That's right.
I got the four pack.
So I have been, for my snack, I've been taking this peanut butter and chocolate to town.
Yeah.
It is so good.
Show that who's boss.
I've been trying to cut down on carbs, everybody. Trying to cut down on sugar and unhealthy food. And because of that, you can't really eat anything anymore. you've tried protein shakes, you've done the powder, but now there is a delicious way to get protein before and after workouts, snacks. Everybody tries to eat better, but healthy breakfasts, they don't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you love, but without all the bad stuff. There are 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. Only 140 calories a serving. It is keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb. There's a variety pack, which is the cocoa, the fruity, the frosted, and the peanut butter. I love these flavors. Brett and I talked about it the other day. You can mix them together, and I do the peanut butter and the chocolate. It's like a peanut butter cup thing. It is a snack that I've been waiting for a long time, and now I have it. So go to magicspoon.com/bigthing and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use that code BIGTHING at checkout to save $5 on that order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they're going to refund your money with no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/bigthing and use that code BIGTHING to save $5 off. Thank you so much to Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode. Thank you, Magic Spoon.
It's a little counterintuitive, but I always eat mine with just a big Coca-Cola.
That's the healthier route. That's the trick.
That's how
you know,
do it.
Listen.
I'm a big Guinness and cereal guy. Like, actually, I love Guinness and cereal. It's delicious.
It's the Irish in you.
Yeah, really? like Wheaties and Guinness is delicious.
You're
sometimes
lying.
Cheerios. No, it's bomb. It's so good.
Did you hear any of his speeches before?
No, because it's got
wonder why he's been dreaming all the time.
Guys, if you put Guinness in your cereal.
He's like, I know you guys probably feel the same way, but there's always a splinter in my brain that this isn't it.
That's right.
Everything just feels a little off. It's like an almond milk like texture, but it's got like a hearty richness to it and enhances the barley.
I'll tell
barley.
You what, Guinness is great for nursing. So yeah. I was on a strict Guinness diet for a while.
Lower calorie than skim milk.
There you go.
There you go.
Guys,
hey.
Right?
That's right.
Healthy.
All right,
jumping back into it. We got a little bit of time left on this rewatch of Matrix. And we are going to be doing, so next week we will be doing Animatrix and then followed by the 2 and then 3. And that'll lead us into the Resurrections movie, which is, it's so close.
I'm so excited. Every bit of footage I see, every line of dialogue I read, like this, I don't know, there's something really special about living in an age where we had The Matrix come out in 99, which was pre-Internet 1. As we go pre-Internet 3, we're about to transition into a brand new Internet. Like, so Internet 1 was your AOL era and trying to figure
CD-ROM,
it out. And then Internet 2 has been where we've been living for the last, 20 years. Okay. And then Internet 3 is going to be where things are arguably more digital than analog. Because we're getting to the point where money is arguably, it's this. Because the new iPhones 13s, you can already do AR. You can already
you're driving drones around.
Right.
Like that's
it's augmented reality to a level that this, so the new internet is coming. So I love that we're getting a movie much like 99 was setting up Internet 2. Yeah. We're setting up Internet 3 through The Matrix. And the trailer to me, one of my favorite shots is Keanu's in an elevator. That's a glass elevator. And that's a fourth wall reference, which I dig. But also everyone is plugged in, but manually by choice. They're all plugged into the Matrix of their phones while he's looking around like no one's living in this reality.
Right.
So we've already in our reality made the choice to plug in. We've all taken the collective blue pill. We've all made the choice to not be here. So I'm going to be really curious how people react to being called out so directly by a film, because we've all chosen ignorance is bliss. We've all been Cypher this whole time. And it's going to be interesting to see how they tell that story without being like to all of us.
Do you feel like it probably is hard to imagine, but that people might watch this and not pick up on all the stuff that you do?
Guaranteed.
Okay, because I was going to say, like, you've got a brain that's very special.
Well, remember, I watch movies differently than most.
And also remember that
live differently than most.
But remember when a movie speaks to you the way that this movie spoke to Coy, the amount of research you probably did on it, books you read on it, articles you read on it, like things like, so this is 20 years of
data.
Of data.
Yeah.
So
cause
when you're like the book that he's carrying around.
Read it immediately. Like as soon as I left this movie, I started picking up books on philosophy. And
at 11?
I think I was turning 12. So I picked up Kant when I was 12 and I started reading on
how dare you? We don't say that word around
I think
here.
I jerked off into a sock the first time.
No, No, but I really, like, this to me was like, yo, if I'm going to live in a world, I saw this movie as a cautionary tale for a lack of control. And at 11 years old, I decided that I didn't want to be someone that was taking the blue pill and someone that wasn't in control.
Right.
And I made a cop jab earlier. Sorry, I take that back. But there's a certain part of me that I have a problem with authority when it's not in my control. And I do feel like I'm living in an age where I don't feel like I'm in control of government or police force or these authoritarian things. And that's why, again, I apologize. But I do feel this movie informed me going like, no, I'm going to be in control. I'm going to make these choices. So I'm going to learn, because the only knowledge we have, the only power we have is knowledge. So I started reading then what this movie was telling me, like, hey, this might help you in a broader sense. So I'm obviously watching these movies from a perspective of, this already shaped me. How is it going to reshape me? I'm going to see this movie as a resurrection of that side of me as much as it is an action movie. So I'm already prepared to have this conversation and look forward to having this conversation with everyone, because I feel like it only benefits us to look at the world differently. Like, when I do drugs, it's me taking sunglasses off and seeing the world differently. It's not me trying to feel or augment or trip or have an experience that's like a party. It's literally me going, what else could be this perspective? How else could I see this? Just like when you read a book, if you actually think about the act of reading a book, you're looking at a bunch of dead trees with a bunch of ink on them, making mm-hmm. little shapes that we've all decided mean that.
Yes.
And you're tripping balls going like, I'm going in this journey and I'm feeling this. That's the same as doing a mushroom or an acid or anything like that. It's just a perspective shift. So I'm going into these movies going, I want to immerse myself in this world where I'm experiencing something as visceral as reading a book, as putting myself here, and I want to grow from it very consciously, and I want to be informed about how I can make better choices for my life. So I picked up these books at young.
It's a very special brain, I have to say. Like, I feel like a lot, like, I think about, like, my son, who's 6 now, but I imagine when he's 11, if he sees The Matrix at 11, he'll be like, that's what he's going to pick up on it. It's like, he's just gonna
but
be like,
I was reading comics
like
at 2. Like, I read Jurassic Park when I was 5. I was reading comics at 2. Like, I learned how to speak and read.
You read Michael Crichton's
Jurassic Park with like 5 or 6. I didn't get all of it, admittedly, but I knew the basic plot, and I was able to go like, "Yo, we're in a messy way, society."
Look at Vivi. Vivi's been reading full books.
5 or 6.
She started reading books at like 5 or 6.
I know, but not Crichton.
But so, and I can't account for like amount I absorbed because I was a child, I can't ask my parents what do you think. But I was able to go like, this is what my experience was enough that when I saw Lost World, I was like making references and I was able to understand like so. Right. But
I remember reading that book when I was in my teens and being like, a lot of this is really
but I was
words.
So weird that I liked reading and talking, hence my job now, more than I like doing anything else, to the point where I forgot how to walk. So I learned how to walk, and then I forgot because I was so engaged in sitting and reading, they had to take my books away and my little drivey car away. Like, I got crippled in, not in a crippled sense, but I got so impaired by my want for knowledge that I forgot motor function. Which another reason The Matrix speaks to me is literally got so much knowledge I was impaired.
No, there's just certain movies that really do that for you, and this was your Star Wars. I
mean, yeah,
this really, 100%. This really was. This was a movie like the way people were in 1977 as an 11-year-old kid. Someone would go and see it. That's how this movie spoke to you, and this is why this one hopefully can resurrect.
Yeah,
fittingly
my
enough,
hope.
But not even just your hope. The franchise in general, because that's what they're going to be counting on, right? This because if this movie doesn't hit, it's over.
Right.
It's over.
I am hoping, my expectations are high. I'm hoping this resurrects my belief in mankind. Like, I really want to believe, like, at this point in my life, I'm a post-humanist. At this point in my life, I believe that we've lost hope for us to maintain this for even my grandkids' generation. I think my kids could live almost a full life, but that's it for the planet. Whereas if we accept a post-humanist reality, like The Matrix is kind of inferring, especially in the Animatrix, which we'll talk about next week, we can kind of blend our corporal flesh with machinery. We're going to have more cyborg elements. We're going to have more.
Right.
Maybe we do upload our reality to a cloud and we actually willingly accept The Matrix and we remove our sentient concepts and put it in something digital that this planet can survive. But I don't know, unless we make changes in the next 5 years, if we're going to live in any reality that isn't digital first, analog second. And I'm hoping The Matrix has elements of that that gives me belief that we're worth saving, because I do believe we're a virus. I do believe there's an element that humanity needs to be uploaded and removed before we destroy the only thing we have. Because for some reason we're like, let's go to Mars, this thing that has nothing that can save us, instead of fixing the thing that can save us. And choices like that make me believe, one, that we're in a simulation, but two, that unless we start changing this reality, we're done.
It's funny. If you think we're a virus, why would you spread it by having kids?
Because I want the balance to be, in my opinion, a lot of dumb people, and this isn't saying everyone that has 9 kids is dumb, but a lot of dumb people just have a lot of kids. So I think we need to balance that with intelligent people that are going to raise the future better to have 1 or 2. Otherwise, we're overrun. It's a population issue. It's an intelligence issue. It's how you raise the kids issue. So I actually want to have 3 and adopt 4. Like, I want to have an army where I'm helping overpopulation, but also passing on my genes while also raising people to be more intelligent to counteract the amount of people just spewing out kids that are not being educated on bigotry, much less theology, much less philosophy, and to kind of counter the scales to make the future actually worth living. Because plenty of people are having kids.
You can raise my kids for me.
Well, so that's the overall thing is that you look at what this movie does get people talking. It does get people thinking. And that's what a really good story in general does. That's ultimately what this movie does. Matrix 1, first one, at the end of the movie, this is why... This is the same thing, though, when it comes to like the Star Wars, the new movies, but it's different. Star Wars, but the Star Wars, the new movies, they knew they were doing a trilogy,
right?
And there was no plan. This movie didn't know it was doing a trilogy because they didn't know it was going to be so good. But there was clearly no plan to do 2 and 3. Maybe the Wachowskis had an idea to say, okay, if we go further on, we're going to do this, this, and this. But he flies up into the sky at the end of the movie, and you're like, oh, what's that going to be? And then when you pick back up in the second one, it's not as effective.
What I heard was they wanted to do a trilogy and have one be a prequel, one be a sequel, and they would tell the story of the revolution, which is what turned into the Animatrix. The prequels of Star Wars not doing so well, they were like, ooh, people don't like prequels. So Warner Brothers was like, here, have some millions to make the Animatrix, but we still want 3 movies, so we're going to split your one story into 2, which is apparently, and I'm not.
Well, you said that last time, but we want to be clear on that. When you say the prequel's not doing well, you're talking about as far as like maybe
reviews and yeah.
Yeah, because money.
Oh, they made money.
A shit ton of money.
But Wachowskis are people of like looking at art, so I imagine they're gonna be like, oh, this isn't popular. Right, well,
maybe
now.
They should have done it because it didn't work out
with
2 and 3.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to rewatching 2 because I remember watching 2 and said, I'm very curious to how you feel about it because I remember seeing 2 and I liked 2 more than most, but I said that I'm gonna like 2 even more or less depending on how 3 pans out because it's such a setup for 3, and then when you're like, okay. If 3 delivers, then this movie, people are going to go back on this movie and they're going to go, oh man, I missed it. Now I get it. But it's the opposite.
I've also never seen a movie with a sequel go more like, we've got 100 new ideas. And then in 3, they're like, we're not going to talk about it. Yeah, like they introduced so many characters like, what? You guys knew 3 was coming.
A lot.
Why'd you?
They do that. Yeah. And the beauty of what this one is lost in those because like what we're talking about, these little moments whether it is that moment of Morpheus saying, that person right there, like, they're just another person plugged in, but they're your enemy because they don't get it. Like, because then that allows you as an audience member to later on say, oh, okay, I understand why they had to do that.
Yeah.
As opposed to not watching it blindly, because there's a lot of those questions in 2 and 3.
But. And they don't, like, I'm really curious your thoughts, because it's even more, but it is less, it's handled less succinctly.
Are all of the films the Wachowskis?
Yes.
Okay, so when you see that 3, you said 3 did not deliver for you necessarily. Does that affect the way you feel about One, no.
I'm one of those people that I always am curious. People are like, I don't want to reboot because it'll mess up the original. I'm like, bruh, it doesn't rewrite your Blu-ray. Like, I just watch the original. Right. It literally doesn't affect my experience of the art itself. It just means I don't watch 3 as much as 1.
Right.
I've never understood the don't rewrite history thing. Now, making the special edition, that is actually rewriting something. I understand a kickback.
Yeah, I don't like when you're changing the thing that it was.
Actual,
like if they went into the Matrix 1 and started messing stuff up, that's why even Spielberg, who tried to do that with E.T., at one point, and then went back and go, no, you guys were right. I was wrong. Spielberg, Lucas will never admit that. Spielberg says, no, you're right. I shouldn't have, because he replaced, I think, the guns for phones or something.
Walkie-talkies. Yeah, and they look rough.
They look bad. So, and I don't think you can find those anymore. I don't even think you can find that.
Yeah, I don't think, maybe like a VHS. I don't think it exists in normal.
But look, so this is the first Matrix. We are done with that one. We're going to be back for Animatrix. Won't be as long of an episode next week because Animatrix, it's a shorter. There was just I think 9 shorts that lead into part 2. But we'll get into it, ladies and gentlemen. This is the big thing. This is the Matrix. This was our rewatch. I hope you enjoyed it. Please comment. We're trying to comment back to everybody here. If you haven't subscribed, please do that. Subscribe today. Thank you to Coy. Thank you to Kate. Don't forget about the Schmodown Spectacular, ladies and gentlemen. That is this weekend. Koi Jandrew will be there. You got the Schmodown Teams Championship on the line. Shazam versus King Arthur. Marisol McKee versus, I was going to say Adam Collins. No, Marisol McKee versus Griff Newman. John Rocha, the Outlaw, Last Ride, going up against Dan Merle. The Star Wars Championship, Nikki DiMolanta versus the champion, Thomas Harper. And the Intergeekdom Championship of the World, Mike Kalinowski, Robert Parker. Get your tickets or watch it on pay-per-view, theschmodownlive.com. Thank you guys for joining us. Really appreciate it. See you next time.